Do you know what it's like to be on the bill and to play for 15 minutes and the only people there to see you are the other bands and their girlfriends?
From Buffalo, New York, don't mind the grain silos, we'll get to that. Eventually, it's the Struggle Is Real Buffalo Music Podcast.
Welcome to the Struggle Is Real Buffalo Music Podcast, where we talk about the ups, downs, lefts, rights,
and the original guitarist
of the Buffalo music scene. My name is Ryan Garnett, and hi, Lainey.
Hey, Ryan. Oh my gosh, did you hear that Taylor Swift is claiming her former producer is, like, preventing her from playing music at, like, one of her shows? Did you hear about that?
I don't see the problem in that. Does anyone know how much it costs to buy all of Metallica's music so they can't play it anymore?
Yeah, who knows? On today's show, we're going to talk about Noiseland Studios owner and On the Cinder frontman guitarist, Jason Wright.
Hey, Jason.
Hey, thank you for having me.
We're also going to talk about his incredibly affordable studio and On the New, can't talk.
You had it.
And the new On the Cinder album, Lamplighter, and the current state of the Buffalo, New York punk scene.
We'll also be talking about a slate of previous and upcoming shows, and we'll be playing music from On the Cinder, Over and Out, a brand new track from Jen DeSantis, and more. But first, hey, Will Webb.
Hey, Ryan.
I'm happy to see you.
Yeah, I know. It's been a little while.
How's your summer been?
It was long and hot and fine. Got to a lot of good shows, so that was good.
What was the best one?
Of the year or just of the summer?
Of the summer.
Of the summer? Probably, I did see that Ultimate Tour, which was that was live, and Our Lady Peace.
Nice.
And Bush.
All right.
Wait, the band live?
Yes. All in one day. One afternoon.
I like Our Lady Peace and Bush. I never got live.
Although
Ed Kowalczyk kind of creeps me out.
He's got a good voice. Although, the surprise of the summer was the Beck Cage the Elephant Spoon concert.
Oh, I bet.
Cage the Elephant was really awesome, actually.
After I saw Beck at Albright Knox last year, I kind of wanted to just go and see him every time. It was such an amazing show with the lights and everything, and his band was exceptional.
The only problem is that Darien Lake. I don't really love that band.
Yeah, I don't think anyone likes it too much. Were you indoctrinated by the plant people while
yes,
you were away?
I was.
Okay.
Still working with the plant people.
All right. When do we know when they'll be attacking, when they're going to start taking over the plant people?
January 15th, probably, after I get back from Austin.
Sweet. Okay. That's after my birthday. At least I'll be 38 before the plant people take over.
At least we know.
Yes.
Can I try the noisemaker?
Yes, please try the noisemaker. There you go.
That's
yes.
That's a move.
I'm going to periodically involve that in my, I'll find a way to work it in.
If you just keep drinking enough beer, I think you could do it naturally.
Oh,
cheers.
Yeah. I'm not going to say who, but there's a certain member of the Buffalo music scene that I've played games with online, and he farts so audibly that it, like, comes up on the microphone. Like, it actually, like, registers.
I have a few guesses.
We're going to talk about that off mic, because I bet you know who it is. So, Will, one more question. What was it like playing with you played with The Great Mistake on, what was that, November 9th?
November 9th.
At Milky's. I couldn't believe when I saw that picture. It's like, you guys have been around for, like, 19 years? 16 years or something?
19 years, yeah.
So what was it like, after a four-year break, getting back together and doing that?
It was fun. I think a lot of people really enjoyed it. I think a lot of people were surprised that we were even playing anymore, because, I mean, I've joined the Lyones now, and that's pretty much my main working band. But then Great Mistake kind of came back, and I think the band and the crowd was definitely just pumped to be there, and I ended up having a pretty good turnout at Milky's.
Awesome, yeah. No, we got 50 people that night. That's, for Milky's, that's a pretty solid achievement.
50 paying people.
50 paying.
There's a lot of people there that did not pay to get in.
Oh, really?
No, well, none of the bands would have.
They're still
there's that.
Hey, they're still buying drinks.
They're still buying drinks,
they're keeping
yes.
the place open. I'm cool with that.
So
no, you guys are awesome. I was really happy you played, and we're not announcing, we announced a new Pocket Vinyl show
right.
February 21st. They're going to have a full band,
right.
Which I am so fucking excited about. They're like, we want you to put a punk show together. And I'm like, I don't know if that's that's exactly what you're looking for.
No, but I don't think
I
so.
A full band Great Mistake is going to fit in great with that. I think Joe already kind of writes and sings in a lot of the same. I hear some of the same cadences in the way he sings and the way that like Eric from Pocket Vinyl sings. So I think
Eric is definitely a more pronounced singer though than Joe. And I don't know. I've never seen Pocket Vinyl with full band, but I mean their albums have full band on them, so yeah. I'm excited to see some of those songs.
I was almost disappointed when they came to town and they didn't. It was just like, oh, it's just you. But I want to hear what I heard on the CD. That was awesome.
Well, now they're saying that they're going to start their painting, Elizabeth's painting, bidding at $50, which I think is
absolutely
more than
reasonable.
Fair.
Yeah,
more
no.
than fair.
The one on my wall right up there, I paid $215 for that, and I think that's completely fair. I think that's a perfectly fine price for what I think is a great piece of art.
Yeah, it'll be a good show.
Cool. So we're going to take a quick break. Will, what's the second track on the Great Mistake CD, the one from 2010? Is it Flashbulb?
Flashbulb Memory, yes, is the
Flashbulb
second track.
Memory. So we're going to play that.
Awesome.
So here is the Great Mistake with Flashbulb Memory on the Struggle Is Real Buffalo Music Podcast on allwny.com.
Yeah. Shameless self-promotion.
Of course.
Thank you. I try.
We'll be right back.
And we're back on the Struggle Is Real Buffalo Music Podcast. That was Flashbulb Memory by The Great Mistake. We're going to talk some previous shows before we get into our interview with Jason. Thank you for telling me to get back further. I want to make love to the mic is the problem.
It's okay.
It's so pretty.
I understand wanting to put your mouth on things.
Yeah. So on November 9th, we had Makeout Tactics, The Lady or the Tiger, The Great Mistake, This, and Eleni and the Unnamed Band.
The cool band that doesn't have a name yet.
At Milky's. We're getting there. First off, The Lady or the Tiger started. They were great. I was in the band. I played a few empty rooms with them, so I wasn't sure how the crowd would react, but people really, really enjoyed what they did, and it sets even really different from what it was like when I was there a year ago. Like, it's a lot of a whole new stuff, and even the sound seemed to kind of evolved a little bit.
I didn't even see Sally pick up her violin until, like, song 9 or something. I was just like,
that's
like
a damn shame.
I didn't see it. I mean, like, she was singing and stuff, but I was like, when is she gonna pick up the violin? And then she did, and it was great.
Hashtag more violin. Different Sally.
I was going to say, you know another Sally that plays violin?
I was in a band. Like, she's actually my sister-in-law, and I was in a band with her. And I remember at some point, like, when I started getting more involved with the scene, I kept hearing about, some people would mention, like, this great violin player named Sally. And I just thought they were talking. I'm like, how do they know about my sister-in-law? This is great. And then, I'd like to have them battle.
The battle of the Sally. So I call her Sal Pal.
All right.
So we can have this Sally versus Sal Pal violin off.
I forget who PA Line had before Sally, but I always wanted her to have a violin off with my Sally.
Dude, I actually didn't learn about PA Line until Sally came around, but we should orchestrate this. I'm thinking we'll do it in the middle of the show.
Wait. I'm having Battle of the Buffalo Bassists next time.
Oh, but
Battle of the Buffalo Violinists.
Yeah, we should come up with a cool title though.
Yeah,
I mean, not that yours wasn't good, but
it was
a work in progress.
It was consonants. I thought it worked together. Lots of beats.
We can do like the salute to the strikingly sassy
strings.
Shit. Strings, yeah, perfect. Strings.
Why don't you just do like Fiddle Face Off?
That's 100% better than what my crappy idea was.
Will wins.
You're trying too hard.
All right, 1 point for Will. Is there like a correct answer thing on there that you can hit? Like a light bulb, maybe?
Yeah, there was.
I'll see if we can figure out which one it is.
Okay.
You get one try. Yes!
Not bad.
Point for Will. Alright, back to the show. So they were great. The Great Mistake played. I thought you guys were awesome. The crowd
Thanks.
Really dug you. That was kind of peak time for the show, too. Like, which is weird, because Milky's is usually a little bit later, but like, that place was packed, especially for the first two bands.
It was so packed.
Yeah, well, and I thought even when you guys were playing, you know, there was still a decent crowd in there.
Oh, right? Yeah, it was still a decent crowd for most of the night.
Yeah.
So, Eleni and I played third. It was cool.
We did. It was so much fun. I loved it.
Yeah, you guys sounded good.
Thanks.
After that, the band that played fourth, I'm so excited. They're called Makeout Tactics.
They were so good.
It was their first show in Buffalo. It's like Broken Social Scene meets the Moldy Peaches. They're like these seven kids who live in an art house, like right around the corner from this apartment, actually. And they're all really nice and creative and fun. And that was the best new band I think I've seen all year.
I couldn't figure them out. I thought they were really good. It's I didn't realize that it was like it was standing at a show and watching the entire crowd leave the floor and just get on the stage, and then see there were seven people?
Yeah.
And it was like nine. But anyway, it didn't matter. They were a small stage and they were all definitely into it and they had songs about mundane things. But it was good. It was like, oh, I hate my job. Oh, I can't pay my rent. And like, it was like, oh, but it was.
It was all really funny.
It was tongue-in-cheek kind of stuff.
It was. Honestly, I feel like they need like a TV show or something. Like living in that house. Wouldn't that be awesome?
It's just not what I thought seven people getting on the stage were going to give me. And like, it was quiet as fuck, too.
They remind me of New Pornographers, I think, kind of in a way.
It was like the Polyphonic Spree.
Oh, there you go.
But in Buffalo.
Yeah. Well.
It was good.
Polyphonic Spree minus like 60.
But they're playing the Pocket Vinyl Show, too?
Yes, they are. Yeah, I just added them. They were the last band we added.
I feel like this might be... By the way, hi, I'm piping in.
Yes, please.
So just in case you're in the same camp as I am and you're not totally sure about what exactly pocket vinyl means, you want to give us a rundown?
Oh, sure. Pocket vinyl is... typically, they tour as a two-piece. It's Eric and his wife, Elizabeth. Eric plays piano and sings like Ben Folds, is kind of the closest comparison.
Yeah, yeah.
And Elizabeth does live painting. And then at the end of their set, they auction off the painting.
Oh,
and that's
cool.
Why that painting right up there is... That's
That was done during your set?
Yep, that was from November at Revolution Gallery.
That's a lot cooler than I would think somebody could do in one set.
She's
remarkable. It's amazing to watch her.
Yeah, yeah, just watching her do it while the music happens
For your listeners out there, the painting is very good.
Yeah, like for me, like just watching the little touches, like when she added the stars at the end, you kind of see these splotches and you're not sure what the... And just, I...
Yeah.
I
actually might go home and like paint tonight.
Because of that.
Sure, and that's what you should do. And you should come to the Pocket Vinyl show.
Right. But and Eric doesn't even just. I mean, he doesn't sing. I mean, and play. He yells and bangs on his piano.
He's
trying to break it.
Plays.
It's
very. It's definitely underselling saying he plays it. Like just.
Yeah. It's very very good.
He kicks it. No, that didn't work. I'm sorry I said that. And then the final band was this. We had some PA problems. Their drum machine kept cutting in and out.
And this, once again, is two bass players and a drummer.
Two bass players and a drum machine. But this time it was just kind of two bass players and the vocals.
They rock it.
They're amazing. So, yes. I'm actually talking with the folks over at Milky's about making some improvements to that sound system. Because I like it. It's a happy little dive.
We used to play Milky's like 3-ish years ago. And one show we played, now Milky's a little bit awkward because there's mirrors on the side of the stage.
Oh, yeah.
So you can actually watch yourself awkwardly play, in case anybody was wondering. If you know Andy of Over and Out and Radical Operations, we played that show that night, and I'm sure he didn't mean to, but he certainly spilled an entire beer into their PA system.
Oh. So it's all Andy's fault, is what you're telling me.
What I'm trying to say is you can blame Andy for any sound problems in Milky's.
You know, it's kind of like, I'm really happy going in and like maybe even helping raise some money for a sound system there. I like it. I have a vested interest there. But at the same time, it's like, who's going to be touching this thing after I leave? So, no offense.
No, I have no offense.
Yeah, you didn't.
We can offend Andy, though.
Yeah. Jesus, Andy.
You pulled an Andy.
You're making my life harder. So, a couple other performances. I went to the variety show at the hostel. Was it the one-year anniversary that Jack
was
doing?
Yes, it was.
And a lot of great artists played, but the one I want to talk about in particular was Kevin Kaufman.
Yes.
Who also goes by Real Movement. Every time I see him, I'm like, dude, you need a band. If you get a band,
he
I have shows
very good
for you.
With a band.
So, he has a band now. He just told
me.
Yeah, he told me that today.
Oh, how awesome.
Because we're going to play one of his songs in a little bit.
That's good. No, it was his first time playing on the variety show, too. And I never have seen him play before, and I was really impressed.
No, he played in Infringement Festival, and I've seen him at Milky's open mic. He's got a great voice.
He
writes really good songs. It's catchy stuff. So we'll play that at the end of the segment. I wanted to mention him. And then I didn't get a chance to go. Witty Tarbox, like, sold out Nietzsche's for the Mo after party. I don't know. Did you see any pictures of this, Will Webb?
Nietzsche's, no.
I've never seen Nietzsche's packed like this. Like... I can't even remember the last time Nietzsche sold out for anything, really.
I don't know. When the Lyons were there, we were playing with, you know what, never mind, I'm not going to take this out. It doesn't matter. But it was just saying, like, it's the most I'd seen, like, packed in that area for a while.
How packed was it?
I mean, from where the back band stage is, people were watching all the way, like, in the bar where like the little acoustic band would usually set up.
All right, so that was pretty packed. Maybe I'm just missing the popular nights at Nietzsche's.
No, I think it depends on who's playing. I mean, I think we were playing with like Aircraft.
Oh, and I was upset I missed that show. I keep missing Aircraft. They are amazing.
They're really good.
I have seen Aircraft. They're a good band.
Yeah, we had them, 10 or 15 episodes back or something.
Beaches?
I have interviews with them that I don't think we ever aired.
No, I think you're thinking of Dream Beaches.
We did have Dream Beaches. I interviewed Aircraft over the summer, and I'm then holding on to it because I'm a fucking idiot. Okay.
Don't say bad things about yourself.
It's just a struggle, okay. Right?
You're a good person.
Aw, oh, thanks. I can still be an idiot and be a good person, though.
Well, I don't think you're an idiot. I like you.
Aw, thanks. Aww. So we're going to take a quick break. We're going to play some Real Movement. He is sending me tracks, so I don't know the name of the song.
Oh,
but
are we doing Over and Out?
No, that will
we're
be
doing
next.
On
that will be next.
All right, we're doing something completely different.
Yes. Yes.
All right.
This is Kevin Kaufman, a.k.a. Real Movement, and whatever song he chooses to send me here on the Struggle is Real Buffalo Music Podcast on allwny.com. Something or Another by Real Movement here on the Struggle is Real Buffalo Music Podcast on AllWNY.
Something or Another. You can edit that out, by the way.
Yeah. That's the actual name of the song, and I predicted it. I'm going to be really, really happy. So, hey, Jason.
Hey, what's
oh,
up?
Oh, hi, Jason.
Oh, hi.
So
was that the room?
Yes, that's it was.
All right, good.
Well,
before we talk about On the Cinder, I want to talk about your studio.
Oh, cool. Well,
so, is Noiseland Studio, is that an official name, or is that just what I'm calling it?
We've been working with the title Flower House Studios based on, before we were Noiseland, we had so there's two houses, but when we met as a band, as a group of people, as a giant syndicate of drunk assholes, we lived on Flower Street. And since we couldn't come up with a fair name for all the different bands in the house, we had the Stakeouts and we had, we had a bunch of bands. I'm kind of embarrassed to name some of them. We lived on Flower Street, so we ultimately called it the Flower House. And we moved twice since then. Our third iteration was called Noiseland Arcade, based on the arcade in The Simpsons.
Oh, cool.
When I started doing the studio work, I just kept the name The Flower House because it was like our homage and like the only thing, our clinging to what was once a beautiful thing.
Yeah, pay some tribute.
Exactly. I'm getting flack over here on the right here. But anyway,
we need more mics,
the Flower House Studios started out because when we committed to being, On the Cinder committed to being a serious band, and we were going to decide to give up our futures and lives.
Sure.
I needed money.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And I had, basically I had collected the studio gear in order to record our first couple EPs, which were embarrassingly bad. But
you gotta start somewhere.
I'm gonna go back and listen.
Oh, don't, please.
Ryan,
but, yeah, so I started doing, like, you know, very minimal price recordings, and I somehow, I don't know how, but I ended up, stumbling into a bunch of, like, hip hop artists. And even now, to this day, I do probably 70 to 80% like hip hop artists in the studio. And it's honestly, it's one thing. It's brought me to an element of culture that I would never have otherwise gotten to on my own.
Sure.
And it's made me a crazy amount of really cool friends that I otherwise wouldn't have met. I've got people who I've worked with who have gone all over the country, who've worked with people all over the world in the hip hop industry. Now, I can't tell you that I know that much about hip hop, but I record it and I do a decent enough job at that. But Flower House Studios does a lot of genres of music over and out.
Yes. We love them.
Great, great, really, really phenomenal band. I've done 2 records for Shambles. I've done Voice of Dissent in Buffalo. Nice. All, if you're listening, all records you should definitely check out. And we had a kind of like a co-project.
Yeah, I like it.
When we ultimately did the On Descender record. Our good buddy, Joe Lysing, who ran Rotten Metal Recordings, he helped us out a lot. We did some of the tracking over at his studio and then some of it at my studio, which ultimately came to the Lamplighter record that I think maybe we'll play.
Yes, yeah, we're definitely going to play something from that.
Cool.
Good album.
Thank you.
BT Dubs.
So, yeah, I've done some cool things. Definitely not everything, like, I'll be the first to admit, not everything I've created was good. I was bad at this.
Oh, yeah.
I was definitely bad at this for a while.
No, I went to school for audio engineering, so I completely understand.
And you got to screw up a little bit.
I even tell bands, like, it's important to suck. Like, everyone's going to suck. Like, yeah. It happens. If you go back and, like, watch the Goo Goo Dolls in, like, 1982 at the Continental, those videos are, like, near unwatchable. Yeah.
Embarrassing.
You wouldn't believe it.
The first step to being good at anything is sucking at it.
Yeah.
Honestly.
No, I mean, even the first 8 episodes of this podcast, we clumped them all together at once. I didn't even know. The first day of recording, I literally Googled, how do I start a podcast? I had no idea.
Exactly.
The day of?
Yeah, the day of the first 2 interviews.
You should prepare better.
You know, it worked.
Beautiful.
But I was actually going to say, I had a really similar experience in Albany when I started working at a recording studio where it ended up being way more hip-hop artists than it was rock bands.
So the one thing I can say about hip-hop versus rock is that you don't, like, there's a person usually behind the scenes, usually in their own time, creating beats. So when you pass that beat along to a hip-hop artist, their job is to create, you know, lyrics. And,
sure.
So picture that as opposed to, you know, if you're a hip-hop artist, you get a beat, you write a song to it, and you record it.
Oh, yeah.
And then picture that as opposed to a bunch of people learning how to play parts on instruments.
Make out tactics and their 7-piece party band. Or 9-piece.
And then setting up 10, 12, 15, 20 microphones for a drum kit, for a bass player, etc. And then recording. The process is just very different.
Oh, yeah. No, it's much more efficient the way
it's absolutely. And it's, you know, it's not to say it's a 2 different things. And,
oh, yeah.
And neither is greater than the other. It's
no,
just,
I just think I was just surprised when I went in. I wasn't expecting to see that much.
I've actually had gone to the point where I've had different artists that ran under the same name contact
really?
Me. I had Teflon, and then I had a second artist named Teflon contact me.
How weird.
I was very confused because I was like, hey, man, we've been working together for a long time. And he's like, no, man, you're thinking of the other Teflon.
I love how it's like another one, too.
Oh, that's funny as hell.
It's crazy.
So I'm just going to ask this because of my own personal experience. I actually had a run of really young rappers being brought in by managers. Have you had any, like, these, like, 12 to 14-year-olds? Like, have you had that experience at all?
Not that young.
Okay.
But I'm 30 now. So that basically means I should jump off a cliff. But
no.
Oh, I'm 38. I'm
yeah. So let's jump together.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm being slapped. but I've had I'd say most of my clientele is roughly between the ages of 20 and well, most of my hip hop clientele.
Yeah.
20 to 27. Kind of like that. I feel like that is your chasing the dream.
Oh yeah, era. Absolutely.
I mean, I'm 30 now, and I'm still kind of chasing the dream. So who the fuck am I to say? Can I say fuck on this?
Oh yeah, you can swear all you want. I encourage it.
Fuck shit, titty ass twat. Okay, all
right,
know that.
Yeah, fuck.
shit.
That's really got anything.
Oh, I did.
But
there you go. That was too peachy.
Ladies and gentlemen, Will Webb.
I appreciate butts. So that's your chasing the dream era. That's sure. Your I have like the harsh reality of crippling debt hasn't hit me yet. And I still have an opportunity, like I'm young enough, I can make something.
Absolutely.
I can do something unique. And that is the time, you know, when you're if, whether or not you go to college or not, like you're going to college for your thing, but you really get inspired to chase a dream. At least I did.
Oh yeah.
In that like 21 to 28, let's say range, where you're like, I'm gonna do this.
Yeah, I can climb this mountain.
Yeah, I'm gonna climb this mountain. I'm gonna kick its ass. For some people that goes a little longer. For some people they succeed really well. For some people they fall off early. It's all kind of a toss up at that.
Oh yeah.
But that's the sweet spot.
Oh, I agree. No, that's one of the reasons I like playing with Lainey, because, you know, I'm 37, and, like, a lot of the musicians I deal with, they're so jaded after a while that I'm just kind of doing my thing. I just, like, I do it for fun. So,
it's easy to become jaded.
Oh, absolutely.
So many people are, too. It's a shame.
It feels really, from my honest, and this is from my heart, it feels really bad when you put a lot of work into something that you believe in, and one, it goes nowhere.
Yeah.
Or two, other people are putting a lot less work into it and kind of, I guess, bastardizing or like making a laughing stock of your craft.
Yeah.
To chime in, because I'm here to chime in, really it's about ego, no? If you're feeling jaded and you're feeling miffed about, you know, you haven't been recognized for your artistry or you haven't been recognized or whatever, it's about ego at that stage of the game, no?
Oh, man.
Oh, absolutely.
I agree.
I would definitely agree.
Sure.
The ego plays a part in it, but the ego comes, like you slowly build an ego when you've put, you know, your 10,000 hours in.
Sure, but it's whiners or winners, because you're going to get these people who automatically have an audience because it's marketable, or they've got, you know, this teeny bopper fandom or whatever,
right,
whatever nonsense. And you've got these people who are tried and true and just stick to it. Oh. And, you know, I've got plenty of friends who've been traveling with bands because they are just so true to their own voice.
Absolutely.
That they find their audience later, and it's so much more.
And when you're like playing in whatever genre you choose to play in, especially when you're playing in metal or punk rock or whatever, like, I mean, most of these genres have taken a back seat to the pop forefront, and now their audience is kind of niche. Mm-hmm. I like the word niche. I guess the word.
It's niche, yeah.
Yeah.
Took me a while too.
But anyway, if I would say to anybody who actually cares and is listening, if you're feeling jaded, Try to like step back and remember why you started doing this.
Absolutely.
It's very easy to get jaded, but it's usually the wrong move.
Yeah.
If you can step back out of your shoes and be like, I love this because I love it, not because of the recognition I'm getting for it, not because of the money I'm making, you will be a lot happier.
Absolutely. Well said.
I have to add on that too. So I actually was watching a Billie Eilish interview a few days ago, and they happened to say like this question to her, and it was brought up like, oh, well, would you appreciate your craft if everyone were to die around you? Like, if everyone around you were to die, would you be proud of what you did, or were you doing it for them? And she's like, in the end, if everyone were to go away, it would just be for me, because you have to remember your roots, and that's what keeps
that's
you
pulsing,
it keeps you there.
Yeah.
Cassidy? Yeah, go for it.
I like the On to Cinders.
Thank you.
No, because there's a lot of there's a lot of what I heard listening to this band that threw me back to the nostalgia of my go to the show at the fire hall. Hang out with all your buddies who are underage with these bands because you want to kick and punch. And you want to kick and punch hard and dance around in circles. And
I miss being well enough to kick and punch.
Yes.
That was fun.
We've always kind of stuck to our guns in that, like I don't know, we've gone back and forth and like what is like our message, our mantra, our, you know, what do we care about in life? And a lot of people get, I mean, we're honestly in some ways like a political band, but more or less the one message we want to carry is take care of each other. And you know, like we're a humanistic type of approach to it.
Sure.
Like, you know, when we decided to write the album Lamplighter that you might get a couple tracks off of.
Yes.
It was issues that we care about, but it was very personal in the way we tried to frame it.
Sure.
You know, it wasn't an approach like we, you know, fuck the government. It was you know, here's how we've been personally touched by the things around us, whether it be gay marriage or, you know, suicide or whatever. Here's how we feel about it. And it wasn't, it was, you know, take what you want from that.
Sure.
Do you ever feel like the energy of your audience conflicts against the political message of the voice and the songwriting?
The energy of our audience conflicts against political voice.
No. I mean, like, do you get people?
Questions.
No. There's a lot of validity there because we just played a Leftover Crack show, and it left us with some conflicting feelings because I think some people would say that the Days and Days Leftover Crack are associated with things like drug use and overdose and just bad.
Bad living.
Yeah, bad living and just things that, you know, we wouldn't condone. And we ultimately came to the conclusion when we were going to play the show, we're like, we have a message too.
Sure.
And not playing it or backing away from it was, even though some people would try to accuse us of being affiliated with something bad, we decided that we have a message that we want to bring to the table. And it's important to us, so backing away is the wrong move.
So that's a considered opinion as you're taking a show and you're looking to play with these other bands, given their own temperance, their own politics, their own message in their music, whether you want to associate with them or not.
I'm not a fan of, I mean, if you, like, I've spoken with the people from Days and Days, and I don't know Left or Crack at all, but, you know, they're not promoting drug use. A lot of the songs they have are regretting a lot of things that sure. happened. But, like I said, we stand by what we say, and having an audience to say it in front of is what we're here for,
sure.
ultimately.
Do you have a song that stands out as one of your more poignant messages?
The one we've been, the one that is the first track off the record is called Lifeline. Our bass player, Mike, he works for the Crisis Services Hotline.
Yeah, that would be a very hard job.
It's based on our premise. Like, we've had friends commit suicide, do hurtful things, you know, and it's basically, you know, like, you have people here. You have people here to reach out to. You have support. You know, don't feel like you're alone. That's what a lot of the record is actually based off of. It's, like I said, it's like personal, political and personal.
Do you have a co-writer? Are you a writer of songs in your own?
We kind of like, yeah, I guess we both, I'd say it's probably like half-half. We both write the songs. But ultimately, we bring our ideas to the table, and then the three of us sit down. Even the drummer, Tyler, who doesn't sing at all, we all sit there and write the words.
That's cool.
I'm going to jump in here and say, this would be an awesome time to take a break and listen to Lifeline.
Great.
Oh, podcasting. That's what experience gets you. So we're going to listen to Lifeline by On the Cinder from their new album, Lamplighter, on the Struggle is Real Buffalo Music podcast on allwny.com.
Bending over backwards for the ones who
was Lifeline by On the Cinder here on the Struggles Real Buffalo Music Podcast. So before we talk about On the Cinder some more, so you guys charge $20 an hour for the studio.
Yeah.
Talk about why you chose that rate.
Well, the thing is, when I started doing it, I had zero confidence in my abilities, and to this day, I still question them to a degree.
I think any engineer kind of does.
You know, and you should. Anything you do in life, I feel like you should. It's not healthy to completely doubt yourself, but to have the feeling like you want to be better is a good
thing. Oh, yeah.
Well, that's a very equitable hourly rate as far as any recording studio. What is your background in audio engineering?
Well, that's the thing. I don't really necessarily have one. My background is in trying to be a better version of myself than I was yesterday.
I love that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what I say. Aw. Did we just become best friends?
We might have.
Aw.
Moments.
So I started doing, like, back when minimum wage was, like, fucking $8 an hour or something.
Oh, my gosh.
I was like, I know nothing about what I'm doing. Yeah, do it.
No, it's okay.
Okay. I didn't know much about what I was doing. I was like, I can't guarantee you a quality product, so I'm going to charge, like, $10 an hour. I think at one point I actually took a Dunkin' Donuts gift card in exchange for, like, a fair amount of recording time.
I had someone try to pay with cocaine once.
I've had that more than once.
I was going to say.
There we go.
Waiting for that perfect moment, Cassidy.
And then I started getting a little more business. I went to 15. I went to 20, and I kind of sat at 20 for a minute because there's a lot of good studios that charge just over that in Buffalo that have more resources and more knowledge than I do. It's not to say I'm not proud of what I'm creating.
Sure.
But you can go to True Sound or Watchmen or a lot of great studios in Buffalo for around $25 an hour. And honestly, I work a number of jobs, and $20 an hour is a decent wage.
Yeah, it is.
So I'm definitely not trying to get greedy or like I'd like to have a shop outside, like the attic and basement of my house at some point, but like $20 an hour under the table cash is a good wage.
Yes.
I'm not complaining.
No, you're absolutely right.
It's a decent price. And when I have like a rent to pay on a shop or whatever, like, you know, it might change. I mean, I'd like to be successful at some point, but a lot of times I feel like there's a lot of artists who, we've all been artists, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like we can't, I'd love to drop $3,000 in a record, but, you know, if you have a couple songs to record and you've got like a couple, like $300 or $400 in your pocket, like, let's do this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I think it opens the market to people who are independent, and there is so much more of these independent artists these days. There is no such thing as, you know, I'm going to hit the dream of being, you know, signed by a label, right?
Like, I mean, for me, like GCR is like the limousine.
Yeah.
Like,
and that's the Buffalo level.
The Hummer
limousine.
Of like recording studios. And you know what? That's really nice if you can afford it, but I just need to get from point A to point B.
Dude.
So,
you know, Cadillacs are great, but Pontiacs will get you there.
Yeah. And they, you know, they certainly, GCR has its merits, and I know, like, Outer Limit is like, I think, like 65 an hour, and like, they certainly have their merits, and the equipment Outer Limit has is just insane. So if you can afford it, that's great.
The struggle is real.
Yeah, the struggle is real. I'd much rather record a song for $160 than
I have to say that at least once.
I'm a musician too. Let's be honest. Like, being a musician is pretty much the poorest thing you can be in life.
The struggle is real.
I mean, aside from burying your head in the sand, hiding in the desert for like a couple weeks, you're not going to make less money as far as, unless you're a musician.
There's integrity, and you're also reaching out because you're not only, you know, taking your craft and recording it, but you're offering that kind of a lead to other people who don't have the opportunity.
Right. Like, there's a little bit of fulfillment, or I guess, I'm going to say fulfillment.
Sure.
There's a little bit of happiness that I gain from allowing people who otherwise wouldn't get an opportunity to create what they want to create.
Well, to have that tangible product, right? That sound recording, and that's the barrier to entry for a lot of people who are looking to.
And record labels and stuff, they don't exist like they used to.
No, they do not.
There was a time when if you didn't have a label, then you were not going to set foot in a recording studio.
Yeah.
And there was a time when, YouTube didn't exist and the internet didn't exist, and
You know, I remember those times. Right? Uh-huh. Back in my day.
Back in my day. You know, call me old-fashioned, but, you know. But anyway, like, there's... Like, labels aren't... Honestly, even the labels that we've worked with as a band have never been interested in paying for recordings.
Yeah.
I mean, they want a completed record.
They want distribution, it seems like, more than anything.
They want to tack their name on something they didn't have to pay for and take 10% off of it.
Yeah.
Like, there's no... Honestly, if you're not on a major, major label, and if you're in punk rock, that might be, like, something like Epitaph, or... I honestly think even if you were to jump on something like Fat Wreck, you'd probably still have to front the recording costs.
I wonder. I'd want to be on Fat Wreck. I just want to be on all those compilations. Well, Do they still make those compilations?
Yeah. I know people on Fat Wreck, and they're not reaping some kind of crazy recording money.
Yeah.
You know, they're getting a lot of, like, pairs. Like, I can't speak. I don't know exactly what happened with their record, but I'm pretty sure they probably recorded it themselves.
Yeah.
And... It's like, this isn't the 90s, this isn't the 80s, like, there's no rock star recording contract where they just hand you $50,000 and you go and make a record.
They used to do development deals. Like, yeah. REM got, like, I think their first deal was for 5 records. Wow. So they got to put out a couple kind of shitty records, in my opinion, before they got good. And that doesn't, ever since, like, mid-90s, that has been gone.
Nobody's handing you money without expecting more money back.
Absolutely.
But it's funny how we talk about the mid-90s like it was 10 years ago, and it's totally a decade in between. You know, like, it's 25 years
thanks,
ago.
Thanks, Cassie. Thanks.
Yes.
Can you have a sound effect for that?
We need to do, like, a poopy noise. Wait a minute.
There we go.
But also, home recording, like a lot of people record at home now, and you get really, really good quality recordings now with technology, where it's at, and everything else. By, you know, like, you can hear, we'll play some stuff.
Yeah,
from Over Now or from On the Cinder, and you tell me if you know the difference.
Well, that's just it. The energy of the music that you're playing isn't looking for someone to come in and auto-tune your vocals. You know, like, you're not looking for anyone. I think that when you're talking about recording studio polishing and whatever, there are definitely genres of music where that is more necessary.
And I would just say, from listening to both... the On the Cinder stuff and the Over and Out stuff, like, you could have told me that was recorded at, like, one of these expensive studios, and I'd believe it.
Honestly, you probably could, if you really listen closely, you could probably find some spots that probably could use some benefit from some auto-tune, but
it's almost nicer not to hear it, you know what I mean?
That in an era where everything's quantized and auto-tuned,
it's nice to have some
sure, stars. Dude, it's human.
Yeah.
And when we did the Over and Out record, there was, you know, there were moments when it was like, oh, this one violin note was held out like a half a second too long. And let's do it again. And it's like, oh, man.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but you look at that and you look at back in the day when you're recording on an 8-track or something like that. Like, you're splicing the actual tape together to make these corrections.
I was originally taught on a 2-inch reel.
Yeah.
And, oh my God. You fucking mixing shit.
Were you literally slicing things with a penknife and, like, taping it back onto the reel?
I wasn't there, but, like, when I was a freshman in college, the seniors knew how to do it.
Wouldn't it be
cool?
And
we had, we had the tiny little reel. The 2-track maybe. Yep. And then that's what they had, but I learned on the 2-inch reel, and then I learned on ADAT, and then that was when Pro Tools had its boom. Mm. So of course I went to school for recording right after recording studios stopped being as money making and
yeah. Well, you know, that was nice. I'm a person who does, like, a ton of homework on everything. And when I started doing this whole studio thing, like, one of the things I always found coming up was, like, you're in the, like, the heart's there, but, like, this is the wrong time to start a recording studio.
Yeah.
And, honestly, it is the wrong time to start a giant million-dollar major label studio. But it is a perfectly awesome time to... There's a gajillion artists with a gajillion avenues to get their music out, and it is a really, really great time to start a small-time recording studio.
That I agree with.
Where you can give people a quality product with the technology that we all have and a decent price, and there's a gajillion artists that can get their name out. And, like, all I'm doing is I'm creating something that's, like, 2 steps above what you can do at home.
Sure.
And, like, you're going to get a quality product. It's not going to cost you a fortune. And I don't want to sound like the Walmart of recording studios, because that sucks, right?
But no, you're at least Target.
Yeah, I'm the Target of recording studios.
I like that. But, no, but I think for me, it was like, you go to college and you're like, this is where I'm going to work. And then it's like, oh, this is now a degree in starting a fucking business. And it's like,
that's the thing.
I didn't know I was signing up for that. So that was kind of the big shock for me when it went from the bigger studios and all these small little independent ones. But no, it is. We have an Air Mac here that we'll be recording on next time. It was $500 online. I have a $20 IO. All these microphones we have were like $100 total. And even if you just take time and piece stuff together over time, you can do it for pretty cheap, and I think that's beautiful.
Absolutely,
don't tell people your secrets, Ryan.
You can do a lot with very little nowadays.
Absolutely,
and if you look at honestly, this is gonna be like, you should probably edit this out because of how blasphemic I'm about to be.
Oh boy, I can't wait.
But if you really actually with like a very hard ear start go back and listen to like even Beatles recordings. You can scrutinize and you can be like,
oh yeah,
these don't sound that good.
Like, no.
Even they were the top band at the time. They were the number one $1 million studio band, and these don't sound that great.
No, when I went for recording, and they kind of taught you how to scrutinize and listen, there were definitely some albums I went back to, and I'm like, I can't listen to this. Either, like, the vocals aren't loud enough, or all of a sudden it's like, that snare drum. I fucking hate that snare drum.
Oh, how pretty.
Like, literally every Metallica record was ruined for me as soon as it was pointed out how shitty that guy's snare drum sounds.
Oh, dude,
and I'm like, oh, it is terrible.
Memes?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, the memes? Like, there's the girl sleeping in bed who's like, he's probably thinking about other girls. And there's guys like, oh my god, that snare drum sounds so bad.
Oh, I love that meme.
Oh, we're gonna take a break? Alright, Will Webb says we should take a break. We are gonna play some Over and Out that was recorded in Flower House Studios.
Yeah, by all means.
Is there a Facebook page for Flower House Studios?
There is. I'm not gonna lie to you, I don't really use it much, but it does exist.
So what's the best way to reach out to you if they want to get in contact with Flower House?
I would say Carrier Pigeon.
Okay.
If you use the Facebook page, you'll definitely get to me.
There you go.
I just don't promote it as much as I probably should.
Cool. Oh man, I'm gonna pull up the Over and Out archive. I have some. Let's see what we have.
I really didn't know what that music note, little icon on the sound effects board would do, but now we know.
All right, we are going to play Carry On by Over and Out.
Yes.
Here on the Struggle is Real Buffalo Music Podcast.
I put some Over and Out stuff on there, but...
Oh, I got...
Okay, you got it.
Very good.
Is there other Over and Out you'd recommend?
Good.
Okay.
Well, next break we'll get one.
All right. Here's Carry On by Over and Out on the Struggle is Real Buffalo Music Podcast on allwny.com. all we have for episode number 45. Tune in around December 15th, and we are going to have part two of our interview with Jason Wright. We'll be talking about some horror stories from house shows. We're going to talk about touring in Canada, and we'll be playing some more on the Cinder for you. We'll also find some local Christmas music, and we're going to send Santa our Christmas list for the Buffalo music scene.
And check out allwny.com and its family of podcasts, also available on the AllWNY app, including The Skeleton Closet with Carl Winslow, Corey Comments, The Think So Joe Show,
hosted by Karina DeFabio and Mother Shabubu,
and The Big Picture with Michael Sargent, where you can learn how to photograph tiny little orange hands and make them look slightly bigger.
Good. If I can make someone audibly laugh with one of those jokes, that's how I know I did it right. Also, be sure to go to allwnyawards.com and nominate your favorite local artists for the 2019 awards. You can submit until December 15th. That is all for us. Being a musician is chaos. Please be kind. Thanks, and keep struggling.